Good morning. This is KPCW Park City and the local news hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie this morning. On this Monday, it is August 25th, giving you a look at traffic throughout the hour-long broadcast today. No accidents to report or any traffic out of the ordinary. There are slight backups on eastbound 80 as you exit onto 224 and 40 both, but those are par for the course in the morning here in the Wasatch Back. It is a rainy-looking forecast. Currently 54 degrees in Park City and 58 in Heber, with more on the weather in the Wasatch Back. Here is ABC meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Monday forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at partly to mostly cloudy skies as we go throughout today. There will be a good chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms developing for the afternoon and evening hours. Temperatures along the Park City area only warming into the upper 70s to near 80 degrees for a high. We'll stay in the mid-80s for highs in the Heber Valley, with off and on chances of afternoon scattered showers and thunderstorms. Thunderstorms become likely as we go into your Tuesday, both in Park City and for the Heber Valley. High temperatures will only be in the mid-70s, with off and on showers and storms throughout the day in Park City on your Tuesday. High temperatures will only be around 80 degrees for the Heber Valley, again with a good chance of those showers and thunderstorms, especially by the afternoon hours on your Tuesday. Heading into the Wednesday, we're going to continue with this very active weather pattern here as the monsoon moisture continues to flow into the area. High temperatures will be only in the low 70s for us in Park City, with showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day. We'll see a chance of showers and thunderstorms likely as we go throughout the day on Wednesday in the Heber Valley, with high temperatures only in the mid to upper 70s across the area. We'll start to see those shower and storm chances coming down as we get towards your Thursday, but still plan on a good chance of scattered showers and storms. Highs will be in the low to mid 70s in Park City, with highs in the upper 70s to near 80. By the time we get towards your Friday, we'll drop those rain chances to the typical isolated pop-up shower and storm chances across the area. Temperatures will rebound back into the mid-70s for us in Park City for highs. High temperatures will be into the upper 70s to near 80 for the Heber Valley. As you're getting your plans for the weekend, the good news is we get most of the rain chances during the week. The weekend is looking pretty good. We'll call it partly sunny skies for your Saturday and Sunday. High temperatures will be in the mid-70s for us as we go towards Park City for your Saturday and Sunday, with high temperatures into the low 80s for the Heber Valley. Overall, rain this week, dry this weekend. That's a good your latest forecast from the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Thank you, Cedric. And of course, you're the eyes and ears on the road. If you do see any traffic or accidents this morning, that DJ line you can text is 435-655-8255. Well, coming up later in the local news hour today, we'll be speaking with the Wasatch Immigration Project's featured speaker at an event this week, Quetzal Morales, on how to be an UNDOCU ally. That event Wednesday at the Park City Library. Then Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff has a monthly visitation update. And Park City Manager Matt Dias and Deputy City Manager Heather Sneddon preview this week's City Council meetings starting today, and or a special meeting today, and a meeting tomorrow as well. And Park City Municipal and the Park City Chamber are both financial supporters of KPCW. A little local news before we speak with our guests. A Utah man is in custody after a SWAT standoff that lasted over an hour Sunday morning. The Summit County Sheriff's Office reports the Park City Gun Club on Forestdale Drive activated an alarm around 5:30 a.m. yesterday. When deputies arrived, they heard gunshots from inside the building and saw multiple shots being fired toward the outside. A man ran out of the building, got into a car, and fled when deputies tried to stop him. Law enforcement pursued him to Trailside Park, where Summit County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Skyler Talbot says the man crashed his car into the basketball hoops. The man, still armed, refused to get out of his car, which prompted a SWAT standoff that lasted an hour and 20 minutes. Talbot says no shots were fired during the standoff by either the man or deputies.
At this point, my understanding is that the only shots that were fired were at the gun club.
During the standoff, the sheriff's office urged Trailside residents to shelter in place. Talbot says no one at the gun club was injured, and it's not clear what the man was doing there. Talbot says the man, who's in his 40s, is not from this area. He was booked into the Summit County Jail. No charges have yet been filed in that case, and this is a developing story. Check kpcw.org for updates. Eastern Summit County has established a process that lets businesses like Ballerina Farm set up stores and other attractions following an earlier move by Camas. With traditional farming and ranching becoming less profitable in Summit County, rural residents are starting businesses that don't fit neatly into county code. Camas was the first to act, creating a new agricultural tourism zone for Ballerina Farm's new store at the western edge of town on Route 248. August 20th, the Summit County Council followed suit by creating an agricultural tourism permitting process only for the east side of the county. The planning department first proposed it as a new zone a couple years ago, but under the new code, it's a conditional use instead. That means it's allowed in every existing Eastern Summit County zone, but that does not mean it will be easy to get the permit. Principal planner Ray Milliner says there are a host of criteria that property owners must meet to qualify. First, they must already have Greenbelt tax status. That's a property tax break for agricultural property.
It has to be accessory to the farm use, and so you can't just have a couple of sheep out there and then, you know, put in like, you know, a big giant circus or something.
In other words, the purpose is to regulate as much as it is to allow ag tourism. Councilmember Roger Armstrong.
This is putting base guardrails around it, so you can't just jack up a major commercial center and call it ag tourism on a 5-acre parcel or a 2-acre parcel.
The tourism activities can't take up more than 20% of the farm or the ranch's total acreage up to 10 acres. Other criteria include having compatibility with and mitigating the impact on the surrounding properties, as well as adequate infrastructure for visitors. Milliner says the new cidery in Marion, Dendrick Estate, is one business that would have fit under the ag tourism umbrella. It was approved in 2022 as a distillery or microbrewery with a guest ranch or lodge, finally opening this year. Before voting on the approved ag tourism code, Councilmember Chris Robinson asked about hunting lodges. Some ranches may want to open their entire acreage to hunting, despite the 20% land limit in the new code. Former Camas City Planner Amanda Curtis, now with the County Planning Department, says Camas has interpreted the acreage limit to apply only to the hunting lodge building, for example.
And then everything else that was conducted outside of that was considered the ag portion.
Robinson, himself a rancher, also made sure ranches would be eligible under the code, initially only drafted with the word farm. And Summit County is also a financial supporter of this station. In week two of the high school football season, the Park City Miners suffered a painful loss while Wasatch pitched a shutout and South Summit dominated North Summit. Here's KPCW's Bill Skinner with the recap.
The Park City Miners ran into a juggernaut in the form of the Ridgeline Riverhawks in their second game of the season, falling 39-3. The Riverhawks entered the game as the number one ranked team in 4A and dominated both sides of the ball. The Miners were feisty to start the game, holding Ridgeline to a quick punt and moving the ball early. But after Park City missed on a long field goal try, the Riverhawks took over and scored on their next three possessions. They also added a safety to build a 25-0 halftime lead. An injury to Park City quarterback Josh Hofer left the Miners playing their third-string quarterback and hindered any chance of a comeback. The Riverhawks tacked on a couple more scores before a late field goal by Tanner Pidwell spoiled the shutout. The Miners are 1-1 and go on the road Friday night to take on the Morgan Trojans. KPCW will broadcast the game live starting at 7 p.m. The Wasatch Wasps bounced back strong from their week one loss with a 27-0 victory over the Cypress Pirates. The Wasp defense provided all the scoring needed with a second quarter safety. The offense extended the 2-0 halftime lead with 25 points in the second half for the final margin. The 1-1 Wasp will play their home opener on Friday at 7 p.m. against the Bonneville Lakers. In the battle for Summit County, the South Summit Wildcats jumped all over the North Summit Braves 35-13. Quarterback Ian Mayer starred for the Wildcats with four first-half touchdowns as they scored 35 unanswered points to start the game. The Braves found the end zone just before halftime but could not mount a comeback as the Wildcats coasted to the finish. Both teams moved to 1-1 on the season and returned to action on Friday night. The Wildcats will play host to the Juab Wasps while the Braves take on the Rich Rebels in Colville. For KPCW, I'm Bill Skinner.
Here's KPCW's Grace Dorfler.
Community Development Director Tony Kohler says creating the Central Hebert Overlay Zone, or CHOZ, has been in the works since 2021 when the city adopted a new general plan. The goal of the proposed zone is to promote a more vibrant downtown by making it easier for property owners to create infill density and allowing more types of mixed-use development. City Manager Matt Brower told the council there's growing interest from state leaders in Hebert's approach to reimagining downtown.
Utah League of Cities and Towns have been tracking your progress, A copy of the child's ordinance has also been shared with the state housing subcommittee and the state housing czar. They are tracking what you're doing.
The city's exact plans remain in flux. Kohler says leaders have changed the proposal quite a bit over the past 4 years.
Just to provide some 30,000-foot view of what happened, CHAZ has become more of an infill strategy that is created to allow a lot of the historic homes to be retained and infill some of the vacant larger areas in the back or to the side of houses.
He says the new strategy will allow the fabric of downtown to remain. Heber City Council members discussed the latest draft of the proposed zoning changes at their meeting August 19th, and they had a lot of questions. Councilmember Yvonne Barney expressed concerns about the transition between commercial and residential areas, especially regarding building heights.
Do we want it to really start being high, or are we looking now more for residential? And then maybe more of an organic change similar to what we see in the Sugar House area. They use older homes, older properties, and they become businesses. And that's where the transition starts.
For infill housing, such as accessory dwelling units built on the same lot as an existing home, the city is considering whether to allow only long-term rentals. Mayor Heidi Franco asked how the city would enforce such restrictions.
If the city says you've got to have a minimum 1 year lease period in your apartments or your houses in this area and somebody doesn't do it, what's the penalty? This is going to cause you a lot more paperwork.
She also asked whether the plans could require more green space downtown. Councilmember Aaron Sheetwood commented that maybe parks are worth making a city priority for 2026.
I think we are underdoing the park policy in the city right now. I think we do need to think about purchasing smaller lots to turn into pocket parks.
Councilmember Mike Johnston, meanwhile, shared his feedback about the types of development that best match Heber's downtown. He said he'd prefer townhomes or mansion-style apartments, which look like a large single-family home, to duplexes.
When I see duplexes and twin homes, I see a suburban type of home with two big garages and sprawling out, and that really is not old town. It's not historic.
The city's planning staff will use the council's comments to revise the zone proposal. Leaders will discuss it again at a future meeting. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
On the phone with us is Quetzal Morales. She's the featured speaker at a Wasatch Immigration Project event at the Park City Library this week. Good morning, Quetzal. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Gotcha. So I've seen some of the marketing for the event. I think it's on Wednesday at the library, and it's broadly speaking about how to be an undocu ally. Could you explain kind of what that term is and how it was coined and just more generally what the goal of the event will be?
Yeah. So an undocu ally is somebody that's pretty much an ally, right, for undocumented communities. This came about when I was a student in college. I was an intern at the Inclusion Center alongside of my supervisor for my internship. We decided that there was a need for support for that particular demographic at our university. So we came about with this training, and, you know, it's been really good, just because I've been able to, more than anything, just reshape it to the targeted audience, right? And this will focus. I feel like there's so many questions, so much change happening all the time. And I would just love for people that don't know where to start, you know, this is the place to start, and things you can do locally. Because I feel like sometimes people think being an ally means being something like, you know, doing something way, way like out of the norm, but it doesn't have to. I think with allyship, right, it's a verb. We're constantly practicing it and doing it.
Yeah, so you mentioned it's a training. Is this a curriculum that people will be able to interact with and get something out of on Wednesday?
Yeah, definitely, yes. It will be, you know, there'll be some interactive things at the start, and also room to start for questions to be asked. And also another way to support Wasatch Immigration Project, right? We're so lucky to have such an amazing nonprofit here in our community.
Yeah, how did they reach out to you and get the idea to put on this event?
So Mary and I are in a few committees together, and also we Well, I presented this particular training to a bunch of nonprofit leaders here in Park City through the Park City Community Foundation, and we connected over it. We talked about it. So people have been asking for ways to start, right? And this is definitely one of the places where people can start if they want to better support this particular community.
Is it a free event? It's 6 to 7:30 Wednesday at the library. Do you need to RSVP at all?
That's correct, yes. And there is an RSVP which can be found in the Wasatch Immigration Project Instagram page.
I'm sure we'll probably post that online with this interview as well. You know, what can people expect if they do show up? Is it more of a lecture format, discussions? Kind of how have you designed the curriculum and class?
Yeah. So at first you'll kind of get a feel for what it's like, right? Like the people think that like the citizenship test is really easy, right? So there'll be that interactive part. Afterwards, there'll be like not so much of a lecture, but just like little bits and pieces of where to start. And then afterwards, there'll be a little bit of room for questions that people may have.
So you're going to be giving people the citizenship test that everyone takes to become a naturalized U.S. citizen?
Yeah, just a quick one, right?
Historically, like, so what's the average score? I'm curious.
I don't remember that at the top of my head. I'll have to look it up, but I'll have the answer on Wednesday.
Gotcha. You know, just not to steal the thunder of your speech on Wednesday, but, you know, what does it mean to you just in like an elevator pitch? Like, how do you be a supportive ally to immigrants? You mentioned it doesn't have to be anything out of the norm, but it's got to be something more than just feeling good toward immigrants, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I would say showing up, listening, and not making assumptions. It's probably the three things about being an ally, right? And also asking questions, being open to having conversations rather than making assumptions of what the immigrant community might need.
Yeah, and like, you know, could you describe the immigrant community in Summit and Wasatch counties? I mean, I think it's generally very visible in the winter. We have a lot of J-1 workers that work at like the resorts, for example. But I feel like a lot of people, this is probably a blind spot. What does the immigrant community look like? Are there a lot of immigrants here locally?
Definitely. And I feel like, you know, there's immigrants from all over the world too. Like you said, we have the J-1s over the winter, but I feel like it's a chronic, you know, change of pace and stuff. And, you know, we have different people with different statuses. We have families with mixed statuses, within our communities, and people that are impacted by, you know, the current climate.
Are they the target audience for the event on Wednesday? Who do you hope shows up?
More than anything, people that want to be allies for the community so they can show up and have the tools and skills to be able to support the immigrant community.
And, you know, will Wasatch Immigration Project, obviously they're pro bono, low bono legal services for immigrants in the Wasatch back. What will they be offering as far as the event goes? Will there be resources offered by their organization as well?
Yeah, I believe that they will be tabling and just offering, you know, like I feel every time that there is a Wasatch Immigration Project, there's red cards that people can take and pass out and other resources.
All right. Ketzel, actually, I wanted to ask, correct me if you're wrong, you're the outreach coordinator at Jeremy Ranch Elementary?
Yeah, that's correct.
Is this similar to some of the work that you do in your day job?
I would say a little bit out of whatever I do on my day job. My day job looks different every day, right? But definitely working with students and families that need the support, yes.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to mention today?
No, I look forward to seeing everyone there. And more than anything, thank you for having me here this morning.
Of course. Good luck on Wednesday.
Thank you. Take care.
That's Ketzel Morales. She's the outreach coordinator at Jeremy Ranch Elementary School and will be the featured speaker at Wasatch Immigration Project's Immigrant Allyship event happening Wednesday at the Park City Library, 6 to 7:30 p.m. It is free, but they ask that you RSVP. Park City native Brian Friedman, a.k.a. Freedog, is a professional alpine skier turned full-time musician. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on his story.
Friedman grew up in Park City, attending Parley's Park Elementary, Treasure Mountain Middle School, and 1 year at Park City High before transferring to the Winter Sports School. He followed the same path many Park City natives with a passion for skiing do, developing his skill while competing.
Came up through the ranks here and eventually, you know, dreams started coming true.
Friedman started out in the Super G and downhill, but made the U.S. ski team in slalom. He stayed on the team for 10 years, scoring impressive World Cup finishes and earning 2 national championship titles. In between chasing his ski racing dreams, Friedman began writing music. He started playing guitar at 15 years old after his best friend's mom gifted him a classical guitar. Throughout his time on the U.S. ski team, Friedman said he played guitar in his downtime.
I'd write songs about the crazy stuff that was going on at the time, you know, whatever we were up to. It's just, you know, having fun.
Friedman's skiing career ended early after a bad leg injury, but he said that opened up the world of music for him. He started playing more music and produced an album around 2006.
I had a group of friends that, you know, they were looking out for me and they were musicians and they said, hey, you know, you've got some cool songs here, let's record them. And we made a record.
His band, Free Dog, started playing in more shows, and according to Mountain Town Music, he was voted the number one emerging singer-songwriter on Sirius XM Radio's Coffee House channel in 2010. 2 of Friedman's songs were also featured in the Ski Channel's major motion picture, The Story. Free Dog now does short tours throughout the Mountain West and California. Friedman typically writes all the music, which he said is agnostic to genre, but features psychedelic rock sounds with folk and pop tendencies. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Now in studio with us is Jennifer Wesselhoff. She's CEO of the Park City Chamber of Commerce. Good morning.
Good morning, Connor.
So it's the end of summer, almost fall. You know, what have we seen over the summer as far as visitation?
Summer was a little bit soft comparatively, and it's definitely depending on where you look. It's interesting when we look at our data, we have 3 different sets of research and data trends for our lodging properties. And there are definitely a sector of our properties that are doing better than our other sector. So looking at the data that we generally present to you and your listeners, it's a data set that makes up about 40% of our total lodging properties. And they're really more of like the kind of minimized sorts of properties. They're multiple bedrooms. They have a kitchen. They have studios. Sometimes they're ski in, ski out. So they're really more of like the full properties. Those properties this summer are tending to do a little bit better than more of the traditional types of properties that we have in Park City. So we'll try to separate those a little bit. But when you look at the more kind of minimized home style types of properties, generally speaking, summer was better for those sorts of properties than the more traditional. So looking at June and July, occupancy was up for those sorts of properties. June up 6%, July up 2%. But when you look at more of the traditional sorts of properties, you know, think of a traditional hotel room, bed, room, right? That's mm-hmm. it. Those properties were down a little bit this summer. For June, those types of properties were down about 6%, both for June and July.
Yeah, because I'm seeing the transient room tax, that's the sales tax on hotel guests, is down year to date. Is that because the majority of it still comes from hotels? Are the condominiumized properties, those Airbnbs that we have a tough time collecting TRT on?
Well, everybody who is renting a room for less than 30 days should be paying the transient room tax. We don't know exactly how much seepage there may be, but generally speaking, I think we're collecting the majority of that through the tax commission that goes then through the county. But yes, we've seen a lot of variation month to month of the transient room tax collections. And a lot of that we think is timing. People paying a month early, people paying a month late, people now paying quarterly. So there's a lot of variation month to month, but you're right. Like when we look at the performance of the tourism industry, while we look at the occupancy and the average daily rates as a trend, it kind of tells us a little bit about the demand. It tells us about the volume of visitors. What really matters most is the tax collection, right? So how are we doing related to those tax collections? And we don't necessarily like to look at it at a month-to-month basis because the monthly variances don't necessarily, number one, reflect that month. So for example, right now we got July numbers from Summit County, but that actually represents May performance. So you sort of have to change your mindset of saying, okay, these are reports that are in arrears reflecting early. So we don't even have really summer tax collections yet, and we won't have those until starting next month in October and November. So when you're looking at those tourism related taxes, let's just look at the first 8 months of, or 7 months of the year. Sales tax collections are virtually flat, down 1%. Restaurant taxes are the tax group that is actually overperforming. They're up 3% for the first 7 months of the year. Recreation, arts, and parks, again, flat. Those two tax categories, both the local taxes and the recreation, arts, and parks categories, those are generally pretty close to each other. They correlate to each other. But what we're seeing is a dip in that transient room tax collection right now, down about 7%. But also keep in mind that last year was a record collection. We collected over 19 million in transient room taxes.
I guess it's tough then to answer the next question I had, because I feel like there was some talk earlier in the summer of international tourism declining nationwide for reasons of politics, I guess, to make a long story short. Is that anything you see or can track in these numbers?
Yes and yes. We are seeing a decline in international visitor spending. The results for July visa spending, so we track visa card spending, and we can see how domestic visitors, and we can segregate out the international visitors. International visitor visa spending was down in July 10%. The good and bad news about that is that Park City and Summit County, we don't rely as heavily on the international market as other parts of the state. You know, when you think about southern Utah and the national parks, they're getting hit more heavily with the decline in international visitation. In Park City, international makes up about 10% of our year-round overall visitation, our international visitation. But when you look at some of our competitive ski destinations, you have other destinations like maybe Aspen and, you know, some other destinations that their international market makes up 30 to 40% of their total business. So while that's down for us, it's a smaller segment of our overall international market.
I think I've heard that the international market also makes up about maybe 10% of our labor force in the winter. I don't know if you have updated numbers on that of what we usually have as far as J-1 visa holders, but have you been talking with local businesses and especially the resorts about what they're expecting with changes in immigration policy in the national political climate?
Yes, we're absolutely concerned about that and watching that issue very closely. We visited Washington, D.C. with the U.S. Travel Association and a Utah delegation to talk with our representatives about this issue. I don't know the exact percentage, but I know it's about 2,000 to 3,000 employees that we bring in through that visa program. So we are watching it. We've read recently about some of the visa bonds that the federal government is instituting. Those are mostly for leisure travelers right now, but we're watching that to see if there's any indication of some changes in the workforce. We've talked to our major employers about this issue, and because they're also watching it, they're being more aggressive in terms of getting
their employees and their visa holders faster. So a lot of them are already secured for this upcoming season. So that's good news, but they're not in the country yet. So we're obviously watching it very closely. We rely on that sector of our employees to help make our winter season successful, and we're going to pay attention to that issue.
I mean, if we got zero J-1 employees this year, would it be catastrophic for operations, or would it just be difficult? Like, when you say we rely on them, like how to what degree do we rely on J-1 labor here?
Wow. Extremely, I would say. Generally speaking, we have about 14,000 employees who work in the tourism industry. That goes up to about 18,000. Many of those folks, though, who are coming in on the J-1s have multiple jobs. So while the larger corporations and the larger businesses bring in those J-1s, oftentimes then they're going for a second job at some of our smaller mom and pops. So I'm not sure if the actual individual is representative of the number of jobs, because many of them, as you know, are working multiple jobs to just make as much money as they can while they're in the country. And it would be extremely impactful. I think we started to taste a little bit of that coming out of COVID in 2021, 2022, when we had that softening of the market at that time. The other point that I really want to make when we're looking at the tourism performance and maybe why some businesses or some lodging partners are maybe outperforming others in terms of the types of properties, I think our saving grace in this area is really the corporate market. Our meeting planners who are bringing in what I would call small meetings, you know, anything less than 300 people. It's not like we're a Salt Lake City where we have a convention center and a Salt Palace that we're trying to fill. These are smaller businesses, smaller meetings, oftentimes board meetings or incentive travel where you have a corporation who's treating their top 100 salespeople to an incentive event here in Park City. That is such an important part of our tourism economy. It's a little bit hidden because you don't necessarily as a resident see that sort of tourism in our community the same way you would see like a leisure traveler. But it's a really important part of what we do. We spend a lot of time and effort in this market attracting those types of businesses and business events to Park City for a couple of reasons. You know, generally, it's a more year-round revenue, so it's helping drive summer visitation. It's providing that year-round economy. Generally speaking, meeting attendees tend to spend more per capita than a leisure guest on their own. And it's really an important sector for a lot of our businesses. And that money trickles through the economy. So last year, and we'll be celebrating this at our annual meeting later this week, we generated over 1,000 leads for those hotel partners, generating over $30 million just in revenue for those hotel partners.
Yeah. And it sounds like we're entering that season again. Are we about to see that shoulder season and see some of our visitations subside? What are you looking for in the coming months?
Yeah, generally speaking, that group sales department, one of the reasons why we put a lot of effort there is primarily because it's at a time when we really need the business. So generally speaking, about 70% of all of that corporate business comes in what we would call off-season or softer season. So not in the winter months, but in the months around ski season. So we still have a couple of more great months of that corporate market. And correction, I think I accidentally said $30 million in economic impact to our hotel properties. It's actually $80 million.
Okay.
And that's just for our hotel properties. That's not how that money then trickles through the economy, trickling through to all of our service providers, our restaurants, and all of the extra shopping that those visitors are doing. So it's interesting, you know, when you look at the tourism economy, there's definitely different segments that perform differently at different times of year.
Yeah, and I want to touch on a few current events as well. You have your annual meeting this week. People shouldn't get excited if they haven't registered. It's sold out right now, but could you explain what the annual meeting does, what its purpose is, as opposed to like maybe like the Wasatch Back Economic Summit or like the Fall Tourism Forum? You have other meetings throughout the year. How's this one distinct?
We have several what we call signature events that we do every year. The annual meeting is actually required by our bylaws. We're a 501c6 organization, so we are required to hold an annual meeting. And it's an opportunity for us to share our accomplishments of the last year and then give the business community, give our members a sneak peek of what we have planned for the upcoming year. This year, we're changing it up a little bit. Our theme of this event is called Mountain Kind Momentum. As you may remember, and as your listeners may remember, in April last year, we launched the new brand, Mountain Kind. So we'll be sharing all of the momentum of the brand launch in this last year. And then because there's so much momentum happening in the community, we're going to have some local speakers talking about the momentum and the investments that they're making in their own businesses or in the arts. So Aldi Milliken, who is the executive director of the Kimball Arts Festival or Arts Center, and also the chairman of our board this year, will be talking about momentum in the arts. We'll be talking and learning more about expanded excellence and the momentum that we're having in the ski industry with Deer Valley. Park City Mountain will also be there talking about some of the investments and enhancements, particularly at Canyon Space. And then we'll be talking to representatives from the Utah Olympic Park as well, sharing some of the momentum and plans that they have there at the Olympic Park. So a great sort of overview of the year, more business. The Tourism Fall Forum is really meant to be inspiring and a chance to get folks excited about the upcoming ski season, and that will be held on November 6th this year. So mark your calendar. It will, our events do sell out. You know, we are limited in terms of the size of function that we can hold in Summit County, and thankfully our events do sell out, and we encourage folks to register early.
And the upcoming Wasatch Back Business University, is that event still available? Will that fill up?
The Wasatch Back University events don't generally sell out. We hold those it's a partnership with Wasatch County and Go Heber. So every month we switch locations. One month it's here in Summit County, and the next it's in Wasatch County. This one's held at the Blair Education Center. So if we do have overwhelming demand, we can always just add an extra room there. But that event this month, or September 3rd, our next event, will be held at the Blair September 3rd. It's $10 a person, and this event is going to be focused on branding and how to really differentiate your business through your brand promise and talk about how to develop a brand, what a brand is. I think it'll be a really great event. All right. You could register at parkcitychamber.com.
I think we're just about out of time, but is there anything else you want to mention quickly before you go?
That's it, Connor. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Jennifer Wesselhoff. She's the CEO of the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. 11-acre fire that sparked east of Echo Reservoir late Saturday. And here's KPCW's Grace Dorfler, her story on the Echo Reservoir fire.
The fire was reported shortly after 5 p.m. Saturday, according to Utah Fire Info. It sparked after lightning struck near Echo Creek Ranches during the weekend storms. North Summit Fire District Chief Ben Nielsen says the fire was difficult to access because it was on a steep hillside, and there's only one route to get into or out of the community of mostly secondary homes. Several neighboring agencies assisted North Summit Fire, including fire departments from Morgan and Wasatch Counties and Wyoming's Uinta County, Mountain Green Fire Protection District, Park City Fire District, the Summit County Sheriff's Office, and state resources. Nielsen says the aggressive response helped firefighters control the flames quickly. By nightfall, the fire was entirely contained. Firefighters worked into the night to put out any remaining hotspots. During the fire, the sheriff's office notified nearby homeowners to be ready in case of evacuation, while fire crews put engines outside any buildings that could be threatened. No structures were damaged and no injuries were reported. Nielsen says Saturday's storms made for a busy night for North Summit. It responded to at least three cases of lightning igniting, but this fire was the main one. Elsewhere in Summit County, the cooler temperatures and rainfall helped quiet fire activity on the Beulah Fire, which has burned more than 5,700 acres in the High Uintas Wilderness since it started August 7th. On Sunday, officials said the Beulah Fire is 55% complete. Also Sunday, management of the wildfire changed hands as Great Basin Team 4 handed off operations to Nevada Team 1. Firefighters' work includes extinguishing hotspots, clearing fuels, and strengthening fire lines. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In studio with us now, we have Park City Manager Matt Dias and Deputy City Manager Heather Sneddon. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks
Heather,
for having
us. I think
us.
It's your first time on air with us.
It is.
You're one of the recently hired deputy city managers. Could you give folks a little bit, get to know you spiel, I guess?
Sure. I'm originally from Ogden, Utah. Moved to Salt Lake when I was about 10 and spent most of my life in Salt Lake. I left for college, went to Brown University in Rhode Island, came back for law school at the University of Utah, S.J. Quinney College of Law. Practiced law for a long time as a commercial litigator. And then spent a few years as a real estate agent, and then I came to this position.
All right. So we've got you in studio because on a Monday, people might be a little thrown by this, but there's a special meeting today to work on the five-acre site in the Bonanza Park area ahead of the regular weekly city council meeting on Tuesday this week. Starting with today's meeting, it's one of a few forthcoming special work sessions with Brinshore Development, who won the bid for that 5-acre parcel, sort of in the center of Park City there. Heather, our Park City reporter tells me that you're involved with this project in particular. Could you explain kind of your involvement and what we can expect today?
Sure. I'm involved as the deputy city manager overseeing economic development and building and planning and engineering, all of which have a role in this 5-acre site. But what we're looking for today and what's happening today with this special meeting is it's one of three special work sessions with the council facilitated by Brinshore to really hone in on the design, scale, and housing mix of the 5-acre redevelopment. We'll be discussing other details as well. We really want to make sure that it meets the community goals and the council's vision for the site.
Gotcha. And obviously, this long, long, long ago was envisioned as an arts and culture district. Now we've learned that the Kimball Arts Center is departing for a site at Kimball Junction. I don't see many changes to the proposal that Brinshore has brought forward in the staff report. Are there any major changes to the project at this point, or is that to be discussed today?
That is to be discussed, and we're certainly disappointed that the Kimball Arts Center won't have a major space at the 5-acre site, but we're still hoping that there's an opportunity there. We still want this to be a vibrant mixed-use area for locals that will incorporate some arts and culture, but all of that is to be discussed, and the council will be deciding on the design and exactly what that mixed use will be, the housing mix, the scale, the massings of the buildings. All of that is to be determined, and we hope for a robust discussion tonight.
How set in stone are these work sessions agendas going to be? Do they each have themes, or will it be kind of where the council takes it?
I think it'll be more where the council takes it, and each work session, I think, will lead to the development of an agenda and discussion points for the next meeting.
Gotcha. And so could you maybe outline for listeners what the steps are from here before we get shovels in the ground on developing that parcel?
Sure. We plan on these work sessions to really hone in on what the design is going to be. And then once we've got that design underway, we'll be working towards a pre-development agreement with Brinshore. And once we finalize that, then we'll be to the point of submitting plans to the planning department and working towards an amazing site.
All right. And the final result will be a development agreement, right? Or it'll be under the new code?
Yes.
Okay.
Hopefully so.
Okay, development agreement. So tomorrow you're looking at the wider 70 acres in Bonanza Park and potentially rezoning that land for some more mixed-use development. Could you maybe touch on how that is and is not the 5-acre parcel, which is, I think, within that area, but it's a distinct project and situation?
Correct. We're looking at, well, this sort of originates with the Bonanza Park Small Area Plan adopted in July 2024, which is the guiding document that aims to transform the Bonanza Park neighborhood into this walkable mixed-use community with increased affordable housing, more pedestrian bike connections, activated outdoor spaces, and local businesses and arts and culture. That is the 70 acres of the Bonanza neighborhood that's really in the heart of the city, and the 5-acre site is a piece of that that we're looking to redevelop. But this is a broader rezone proposal. So the Bonanza Park mixed-use district that is before the council tomorrow evening is a collection of proposed changes to the code to implement the Bonanza Park Small Area Plan.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the local business focus and obviously residences for people to live there. Can you go into the code and just ban, you know, tourist-focused aspects of that code? How are you actually, like, putting that into words on the piece of paper?
You know, I don't think we can ban those uses, but we're really looking to encourage more of this sort of walkable mixed-use community. There will be parking reductions and some transit strategies that are incorporated. It caps transient uses to boutique hotels with shuttles. And we're looking to really just develop this into a more vibrant district as opposed to strong parking, commercial, industrial uses that exist there right now.
Yeah, people may remember from earlier reporting, you know, developers are encouraged to look at these Tier A and Tier B enhancements that give them some bonus density. There's some economic incentives to deliver these community needs. You've identified Tier A, which I think is like a critical road that's needed, or affordable housing or underground parking, and I forget the Tier B enhancements. But, you know, have you done those sorts of incentives before? Where did the idea for those, that tiered system, come from?
Well, I guess if I could jump in, it's fairly common in the planning and development world. Most communities will call it performance zoning, where in return for additional community benefit, in this instance, it could be more open space, it could be underground parking, could be transit amenities in other communities, affordable housing, bike shared. In exchange for those, there's performance level zoning, which at times is additional density, additional height, perhaps less setbacks. And so it's actually a really common phenomenon throughout cities and towns across the country.
Yeah. And can you remind people, I think, where the 70 acres are? I've talked with people around town, and they're like, there's not 70 acres in Bonanza Park, but I think it includes Snow Creek, maybe? Could you talk about the boundaries of what we're talking?
Sure. Conventional wisdom would say most of the community is familiar. If you're coming into town on 248, there was a gas station there called the Maverick. And more or less in the Maverick all the way down 248 to the Snow Creek Shopping Center. There's a Jess Reed building there and a hotel that's people conventionally call the Yarrow. And then taking that all the way up 224, excuse me, to the intersection with Colesport, and then kind of coming back around Deer Valley Drive and then down Bonanza again. There's this big island, or sort of a what has been conventionally a light industrial island in the middle of town. And for years, this had been sort of this had been just a support network of small businesses that have been supporting the economy in Park City. So it has storage facilities. It has all sort of back-of-the-house facilities for ski shops and tuning skis and getting haircuts. And it's actually a very diverse small business district. But it is bisected by sort of impenetrable walking areas and different elevations that make it very hard on a pedestrian, on a bicyclist, and anyone seeking to sort of access one property from the next. It was developed 40 years ago when it was sort of suburban type development where you drive to your service or the business that you were seeking. And even if you wanted to go across the street, you sort of have to drive across the street because it wasn't built that well with sidewalks and connectivity. So this zone seeks to enhance that and create a more vibrant, mixed use, walking, pedestrian-oriented district that, in exchange for some of these measures that we've identified as beneficial, more walking, more biking, more affordable housing, there could be a performance zoning element here. We're adding some elements to make this reflect what the community desired through the process that we went through.
All right, and we've got to wrap it up now, but Matt, I know you announced your retirement effective September 15th last week. Is there anything that you want to say to listeners just in closing? It won't be the last time you're on our air, but
I don't know. It may be, actually. I'm not sure. We have two very competent deputy city managers that are stepping in to take the reins and will be driving the ship over the next few weeks as I transition. I guess I want to say thanks. I leave here really optimistic about the future of the municipality, about the staff that I've had the ability to work with, the city council members. I've had tremendous mentors and council and staff and community stakeholders along the way. And I have some just really fond memories of being in Sundance, the July 4th parade, where this community really shines. And so I'm really optimistic about the future. I'm very proud of what we accomplished here, from a building affordable housing, renewable energy, electrifying our transit fleet, preserving open space in Treasure Hill. And I would like to leave with that optimism. Park City's an incredible place to live, work, and play and raise a family. And there are some challenges that lie ahead, of course, but I hope folks can just remember sort of the abundance of opportunities here. And I want to thank everyone for their support along the way. It's been a tremendous adventure.
All right. Well, thank you again. We've been speaking with Park City Manager Matt Dias, outgoing, and one of the recently hired Deputy City Managers, Heather Snedden. Thank you both for coming on this morning.
Thanks so much, Connor.